Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Want to try a free sample?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small throw my body off balance? Time to consult the online experts. One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
Insulin sensitivity.
One cheese
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Cygnos.
Across six episodes, we've covered a lot of ground. But one thing we haven't done, sort of glaringly, is talk to someone who's actually done a bathing scene. Well, we finally did.
I started working for Hallmark when my son was almost one. They'd been asking me to do these movies for a while.
This is Autumn Reeser. She's been a fixture of movies on the Hallmark Channel since 2012.
Hallmark is a woman's programming juggernaut. You know them for Countdown to Christmas. Famously, every year they release 40 new Christmas movies, insane, which dominate the cable TV holiday calendar. But really, Hallmark's been boldly carrying the torch for the romantic comedy, which, as we know, fell out of vogue or was rudely shoved out of movie theaters amid the superhero craze.
And it's got a different vibe than Lifetime, right?
Oh, yeah. If Hallmark is the family-friendly network, then Lifetime is Hallmark's naughty cousin that gets into trouble and has to go away for a few months.
Oh, yeah, that's a family member.
Yeah, she's in reform school. Yeah. We don't talk about Becky.
Yeah, we don't talk about Lifetime. Okay, so Hallmark, it's the nice one. Autumn's done 20 movies with Hallmark, and in 2015, she did a movie with not one, but two tub scenes, plus a lake and a pool. It was called I Do, I Do, I Do.
And it's a time loop movie. Okay, Autumn plays an architect named Jacqueline, and she's engaged to a doctor who's perfect on paper. Only guess what? He's not. Typical. On her wedding day to this idiot, she makes a wish for a do-over, as one does, and so magically, she starts repeating her wedding day over and over. And there's a mystery man who kisses her in the forest, turns out to be her fiancé's brother, and eventually, her one true love. Also, of course, trauma. Jacqueline's parents died on the way to the hardware store, so she's risk-averse. She talks about the, quote, illusion of control.
I mean, you can die while going to pick up light bulbs, and nothing's safe.
In the first tub scene, she's complaining to her sister about this mystery man in the forest.
No, he kissed me. I didn't kiss him back.
And in the second, she's learning Italian.
Da tanti anni che non vado in Italia. Mi piacerebbe trascorrere una vacanza.
So at long last, after 3 years of this project, we actually got to ask someone what it's like to do a bathing scene.
Yeah, what goes into a tub scene? Or what went into that tub scene?
Just bubbles.
Technically speaking, day of, you know, is there an intimacy coordinator? What is all this stuff?
Oh, first of all, we shoot these movies in 3 weeks. So we get 1 to 2 takes per scene. It's so, so quick. I'm pretty sure I'm just wearing the bathing suit that I wear later in the movie and I pulled the straps down. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I can't promise. That seems reasonable. And then there's a lot of bubbles. You guys seem much more interested in these scenes as though there's much more nuance to them than there actually is.
Welcome to our hell, Autumn. Welcome.
So, I don't know what we were imagining.
I guess we thought the experience of acting in the tub would be more profound.
Yeah.
Like, there might be opportunities between takes for Autumn to sit in the tub thinking about her own life, or hallucinating an evil doppelganger, Black Swan, or transcending.
Yeah, nope. It's almost like it's just a job with all the tedium and repetition of any job.
Yeah, imagine shooting them, right? Filming these movies, it's like, what scene is this? What day is this? Because you're in the same location in the same dress, but it's a different day, but it's also not a different day.
Which sounds a lot like her character, Jacqueline.
You can't transform me. Nothing can. This is going to be who I am forever. her this one day. This is my past, my present, and my future, and this is not the happiest day of my life.
In Autumn's case, the art she made also imitated the life she made.
I shot this movie 10 years ago, and I don't really remember it. And watching it back, like, literally, this is what happened in my life afterwards. Like, I was married and, you know, living kind of a, like, oh, this is the right thing to do. You get married, you have kids, like, checking all the boxes.
So we didn't have any idea who we'd end up talking to about doing a tub scene. But talking to Autumn kind of blew our minds. When she told us her tub was in a time loop movie, and that at the time of filming, she felt like her own life was looping, and that she was just checking all the boxes the same way her character Jacqueline was, well, all kinds of stuff started to fall into place. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
And I'm Gabby Lombardo. And this is Why Is Amy in the Bath? The final edition.
It's our grand finale, more or less.
Across this series, we've looked at all these different kinds of bathing scenes. These are stories about women who are stuck in the tub, stuck in life. Is it any wonder so many time loop narratives involve water? We want to be cleansed by the bath, but often we find out the water is stagnant.
The time loop. It's been the time loop the whole damn time.
Yeah.
The same old things coming back around over and over, including Amy Adams, the actress we've been spinning around in circles trying to figure out. She spent nearly 20 years in a never-ending series of baths, stewing in an eternal struggle for the Oscar, just like Sisyphus pushing a big-ass clawfoot tub up a hill forever.
Which is why Amy Adams is the perfect 21st century subject and probably the best avatar for the question of leading ladies bathing on screen after Y2K. Something, Brandon, you probably picked up on subconsciously when you first asked, why is Amy in the bath?
Yeah, definitely. And for some surface level reasons. Her career started in 1999 with Drop Dead Gorgeous, which is a satire about the darkness on the edge of town and on the edge of girlhood in America. And hell, she played Amelia Earhart in Lois Lane. She's all American in a very nostalgic way.
Yeah, she's got that golden era red hair. She can sing and dance. She's a classic starlet.
She's hyper-individualist too, and hardworking like all good Americans. 6 Oscar noms, no wins, but she keeps tubbing along after every snub, every box office flop. There's a weird majesty and permanence and emptiness in that, perfectly illustrated by her trip to the Walk of Fame, which, like so much of American mass culture, turned out to be kind of just a marketing thing. The price of immortality is 75 grand, and you'll live forever, embedded in the sidewalk while tourists drop French fries all over you.
Which is literally a visual in the substance. That's the thing. We know a lot of this stuff is hollow. Glamour, stardom. We satirize it. But we keep on doing it.
Yeah, Goop will sell more martini bath salts. Hans Grohe will butcher the English language with more sex toys called the wave, clitoral, something, something, something. And of course, Amy will do more bathing scenes.
Yeah, because we're looping, nostalgic, we're isolated, and Brandon, we're stuck.
Yep.
Maybe the tub is the embodiment of that stuckness. We're all good old Billy Taft.
Former big guy president.
Former big guy president, lodged in his tub like a bullet in the chamber.
Wow.
Oh my God.
That's right. Or like that one gal who went viral for lathering herself up with coconut butter or whatever.
Coconut oil. Coconut yeah, oil. That's the dark side of wellness.
She couldn't get out. She was too slippery. Couldn't get out of her tub. Had to call for help.
Call for
online.
Help. On Tumblr.
On Tumblr.
She said she was slick as a roasted potato stuck in a pot. Which is what we'd all like to be.
Yeah. So it happens to all of us eventually. But we spent a lot of time trying to figure out why bathing scenes doubled in the 2000s. We explored whether it had something to do with the popularity of psychological thrillers, or whether it was because of home improvement shows, or because companies just really wanted to sell us bathtubs. But now we're going to ask if the reason bathing scenes drowned us in the 2000s is more cosmic.
Holistic journalism.
Holistic journalism. You finally come around. Listen, if it's more metaphorical, if it's really just the story of all of us being stuck in the tub, soaking and thinking in the same old lukewarm water, then is that the real reason this is the century of bathing?
In this episode, we're going to ask if this, finally, is the answer to our initial question.
Why is Amy in the bath? I think we finally got it.
Take that, Brenda and Gabe.
That's right. Call back. Once we started looking, we saw time loops everywhere.
Yeah, everything's looping, even in real life. Last week, we talked about how the 2025 Best Actress nominees are recycling old ideas, right? Anora is Pretty Woman. The substance is Sunset Boulevard with spandex.
Mm-hmm. But, man, movies have been in a time loop for a while now. Look at the box office. In 2024, the top 10 movies all came from existing intellectual property. There was Inside Out 2, Deadpool and Wolverine, which is just a movie about recycling Marvel material and how tired all of it is. Despicable Me 4, Dune Part 2, Twisters, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, Kung Fu Panda 4, Bad Boys Ride or Die, and Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, they are all sequels or lega sequels like Twisters. That's insane.
Yeah, but we're so used to it, we don't even notice it anymore.
And it goes back even further. If you look at the number one movie for each year of the 21st century, that's 2000 to 2025, they're all either sequels or movies based on IP from the 20th century.
The 20th century, aka the American century.
Marvel and DC movies, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Transformers, Shrek, Lord of the Rings. There's only one that's really new, Avatar. 2010, and James Cameron was basically aping Princess Mononoke, one of Miyazaki's many masterpieces, the superior film.
Uh-oh. And if you go back further into the previous millennium, it's like a switch gets thrown. There's so much new stuff. Before 2000, there's still sequels, but there's lots of novelty. Titanic, which is an old story, but made new by James Cameron, and Kate Winslet.
And Britney Spears in the music video for Oops, I Did It Again.
Of course. There's also Independence Day, The Lion King, and of course, Ghost.
Demi again?
Moore. Mm-hmm. And that's just in the 90s. And of course, 1999 is known as the greatest year for movies ever. Like, everybody was trying to get all the good stuff out before Y2K.
Right.
Before the end of the world.
So if the 2000s are the century of bathing...
As we've said and proven to our own and everyone else's satisfaction.
Right, of course. If the 2000s are the century of bathing, then you might say the substance we're bathing in is nostalgia.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Nostalgia, the state of being metaphysically stuck in the tub. Not for nothing, but time loop movies tend to use water as a symbol of time standing still. Bill Murray kills himself a bunch in Groundhog Day, one time electrocuting himself in a tub. And in the movie Palm Springs, Andy Samberg is often just floating in a pool, which is kind of obligatory for time loop movies because it represents the ennui of endlessly repeating days. It's a symbol of leisure turned into existential horror.
Right. Autumn Reeser's character does that, too, in her movie.
Yep.
We talked about that when I related my unfortunate Irish spring experience. Tubs are timeless. Showers are time conscious. They're symbols of growing up. All this tub imagery is telling us we're not moving on. We're not getting on with it. We're not growing up. We're not growing, changing.
Okay, so the big irony of the 2000s, as lots of people have pointed out, is that instead of ushering in a new age of innovation, revolution, rebirth, it's been, at least culturally speaking, a lot of retread. Movies, music, fashion, it's all just reworkings of what came out of the 20th century. And Gabby, I have a whole other big rant about how all of these companies are trying to make flying cars a thing. Oh. Like make the Jetsons a thing.
Oh no, I've heard this rant. This is your Irish Spring.
This really is. And it burns.
Meet George Jetson!
Okay, listen, so companies say we need these flying cars to fix traffic and on, but everybody knows it won't fix traffic. It'll just add more traffic to the sky this time and change nothing on the ground, and really only be a way for people with money to get around faster while clogging up the skies. But everyone points to this like 1920s idea and goes, see, that's what the past told us the future was supposed to look like. That's where we have to get to. But that doesn't make any sense.
All right, you got that out of your system?
Yeah, mostly.
See, you're thinking about flying cars, but there's one thing making it all swirl faster and faster. And it's not flying cars, Brandon. It's the internet.
It spans the globe like a superhighway. It is called internet.
Conventional wisdom says that trends cycle around every 20 or so years. There'd be an innovation and then recycling of that new stuff. That would get tired, and then there'd be more innovation. But the internet makes everything a perpetual now. Every trend, every fashion, everything everywhere all at once. And we're just building our little digital worlds from the bits and bobs we want. Right? There's no context. It's all just pixels. There's a very insecure feeling all around. Big studios, big fashion labels, or whatever. They don't know where things are going, so they want to just serve up the same thing over and over. And we're all insecure enough about the future to want to spend all our time in the past.
The Jetsons is not the future.
Okay, Brandon, we get it.
All right. So, Gabby, there is one bathtub scene that, to me, really explains our whole plight. All right, follow me. It opens on a series of row houses. It's a mid-70s, very gritty kind of lower middle class American neighborhood. Inside, there's a guy in the bathtub. He's enjoying his solitude. And then the door opens, and another guy comes in. It's all played very vague, very suggestive. Are they roommates? Are they lovers? What is this? The guy in the tub is like, what are you doing? The other guy starts wheeling in a piano.
What's that piano doing there? You can't push that piano through the bathroom door.
Oh, sure I can, Bert. Didn't you see that?
And then the guy with the piano, his name is Ernie, of all things, he starts playing a song, and he wants his friend in the tub, that guy's name is Bert, to sing along.
Sure, Bert. What's a sing-along without a piano?
Bert and Ernie?
Yeah.
Sesame Street?
Yeah, you've heard of it? I guess so. 1975, classic era of failing cities, and so Ernie starts singing. This is the first song of the Bert and Ernie sing-along record, which is a concept album where humans and Muppets roll through that bathroom.
Right, and they sing songs together with Bert in the tub.
Yeah, but listen to this. Very first song, Bert lays it out. He doesn't want to sing along.
No, I refuse to sing along, I won't.
I can't believe we're still talking about
listen,
this.
Listen. This is what's important. The way he protests is by singing along.
Right.
He can't escape, see? He has to participate. But even protesting is participating.
This is your great capitalist critique.
Well, Sesame Street's anyway.
Okay, let me try to unpack this Bert and Ernie thing.
Please.
Bert is alone in the tub, then his space is invaded by a series of people who all demand that he sing with them.
Right.
And he can't just get out of the tub, because presumably a naked Muppet would be the end of Sesame Street.
One assumes.
So he's trapped in the tub.
Trapped.
And like Big Bird and everybody coming in and singing at him, that represents society?
Yep, exactly. All the various social pressures, you know, that we've talked about before, to make sure you have the Karate Chop pillows and you watch the latest big budget sequel and all the other things that we suspect are maybe actually as crazy as we suspect they are.
As crazy as a bunch of Muppets invading your bathtub.
At least that crazy.
And so instead of rising up out of the tub with a naked spirit of revolution,
yeah,
you sit in the lukewarm bath and sing along.
You sing along.
That is so stupid. But it also sounds kind of true.
Stupid but true. That's our brand. I had to dig around our interviews with scholars to see if anybody at all agreed with this.
I don't think anybody talked about the Bert and Ernie sing-along.
No. But Phyllis Thompson talked about how having all these options, like all these different Muppet songs, seems like freedom, but ain't.
I don't feel that that triumphalist narrative of increasing options is totally accurate, though. I feel strongly that there is much more of what I think, the term that I tend to use is a cultural hangover, that we're, there's a half-life of old ideas. And old ideas are much more likely to stick around a lot longer than we want to believe. And particularly young people tend to think of the world as having changed a great deal, when in fact, there's still plenty of septuagenarians running things. So I think all victory narratives where the world has just become more just, et cetera, and everybody's making choices, even when applied to bathtubs, would give me pause.
We're trapped in the loop of nostalgia, so we try to buy our way out. That's what we talked to Catherine Liu about.
I've often thought, like, when there's no more social improvement in the world, all we can indulge in is home improvement and fantasies of home improvement. Because we can't afford to buy our own homes, but we can indulge in the fantasy of having this, like, renovation project and house flippers. You know, there are, you know, channels on television, cable, and on the internet devoted to all of this stuff.
Catherine is a cultural theorist and author at UC Irvine. She's written a lot about what's called the professional managerial class, which is this concept invented by social scientists in the 1970s to describe what, let's face it, most of us listening to podcasts are. We're middle class, working for corporations most likely, helping to create capital at the expense of true social equality, instead of working together to solve the big issues, the real issues of our time. The environment, wealth inequality, threats to democracy, all of it.
You keep talking about this clawfoot top, and I know exactly what you mean. It's like nostalgia, vintage, renovation, and this kind of indistinct class position of the people that are in it, like sort of middle management.
We can't admit that there are macro-level problems, so we just give everyone their own individual micro-level problems. It's a distraction. And how do we occupy our time instead of working together to solve these big issues? Well, Catherine says we focus on ourselves. That's how wellness becomes a 21st century mantra. You can't stage a revolution if you're soaking in the tub with Gwyneth's martini bath salts.
We call it the emotional detox bath.
Get this. Catherine also offers up a reason why we see the Y2K tub boom. So remember, a few episodes back, we talked about how 21st century tub scenes are often about trauma. About women working their shit out while they soak. Catherine says that's because American culture prioritizes the needs and wants of the individual over the needs of society. So you see the trauma plot everywhere, in movies and TV, but also on people's Instagram reels. Personal trauma is the coin of the realm. And this professional managerial class creates all that media because it's preferable to thinking about other bigger issues.
And they want to create this world in which there are forms of harm that transcend economic forms. Once you have like something like sexual trauma, childhood trauma, be shown as something that middle-class women and upper-middle-class women and even very wealthy women can experience, then the media loves it. Nobody wants to know about what it is to be absolutely precarious, not know where your next meal comes from, or to work a shitty job because you have to because you otherwise can't pay your rent, or be choosing between like paying for a kid's prescription medicine or your prescription medicine. Like that kind of realism, nobody wants.
Which may explain why all those psychological thrillers, with all their trauma plots, focus on women in some vague, magical middle or upper middle class where money is no issue and personal suffering is what it's all about. That satisfies the audience's sense that their own private issues, hashed out in that renovated clawfoot tub, are the most important subject for drama. As opposed to all the social issues that we need to face in order to make real change.
Which was kind of a point I was banging on about in a bonus episode recently, about the movie Julie and Julia, or as I kept calling it, Julie versus Julia. Different story. Anyway, Amy Adams and Meryl Streep are in that. Amy plays Julie Powell, a real person, who works in this call center in New York City, dealing with all these traumatized people who lost friends and family in 9/11. And we understand that the job is so emotionally draining that it's actually better and more heroic for her to start a blog recreating Julia Child's recipes.
I poached an egg. It seemed like the perfect thing to do on perhaps the second worst workday in recorded history.
That movie says the personal struggle is better than engaging with larger issues.
And you know what? This individualist mindset is reflected in the changing architecture of American homes. Private spaces like bedrooms and, of course, bathrooms. They've gotten bigger.
California modernism has to do with like inside-outside living, but the bathrooms were not the centerpieces of these homes. It's only through later renovation that you have to make the bathrooms look like the bathrooms of like 60s motels, because the social spaces were the best spaces to be in the house. It's a whole turnaround of like our isolation, our hyper-individualism.
So one cause of what we've been calling the century of bathing, and what you, the listener, will now call the century of bathing forevermore, is nostalgia. It's the ultimate time loop. Catherine just pointed out how that focus on nostalgia and on the individual leads to something else. Our isolation.
This is for all the lonely people.
That's right. You've heard about the loneliness epidemic, surely. Mm-hmm. Something like a third of Americans say they're lonely all the time. People have fewer friends and see them less often. A Harvard study found that almost 60% of young adults say their lives hold no meaning. And the former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, he called loneliness a public health crisis.
Loneliness is a great masquerader. We shouldn't assume that just because someone is surrounded by people, because they have happy pictures that they're posting on social media, that they aren't struggling with loneliness. It increases your risk of heart disease, of dementia, of stroke.
And you probably know there are about a zillion studies from the last decade or so that show that people across the board are having less sex. All kinds of possible reasons for this, but one that comes up most consistently is, of course, the internet.
A generation growing up spending their time on social media. An endless supply of porn, burnout from dating apps, on and on.
A new study of over 26,000 people reveals that Americans are having far less sex.
Some people say that the internet has made it so easy to gratify basic social and sexual needs that there's far less incentive to go out into the real world.
And one in ten people actually checks their phone during sex, which just didn't.
We know that boys are going to the right and women are going to the left, and increasingly they're saying that they refuse to date someone on the other side of the aisles.
And remember Jamie McCall, the production designer we talked to a few episodes back? She says that distinct lack of horniness is reflected in movies and TV.
I mean, let's be honest, the sex scenes in film and cinema and TV have really kind of gone down, you know, from the 70s, 80s, and 90s to now. I think what they show is way less than it used to be. Some of the shows that I've worked on that do have sex scenes, it's really, you know, you can read it in the script, but then once you get down to it, they always get minimized once it comes down to shooting.
Yeah, so this is part of the reason we suddenly see a ton of bathtubs in 21st century film. You got audiences and actors and maybe even directors who have less appetite for watching or performing or screening sex in mainstream entertainment. And on top of that, since the superhero IP craze, every movie has to be accessible and fun and good for kids to make money in theaters and also overseas. So an R rating is a death knell for your film's box office potential. Which means instead of sex or outright nudity on screen, a PG-13 sleek wet shoulder in a bathtub may be all we're going to see.
A sleek wet shoulder may be as much as we're going to get.
It's like we're still living in the days of the Hays Code, but this time we're censoring ourselves. Only, we're not grabbing our pitchforks to protest that decline of sex and nudity, because it actually feels true to our increasingly sexless, lonely 3D world.
The point is, the bathtub is kind of the perfect symbol of our self-imposed isolation.
Everybody in their own little world, stewing.
You know, everybody's gung-ho on this idea of constructing digital worlds, too. But that's really backfired. There's this concept called techno-feudalism, which says we're all engaging online with these tech monoliths and working hard to give them our data for free, which they then use to make hundreds of billions of dollars. In exchange, to put it in our terms, they build an individualized digital bathtub for each of us.
And as algorithms get better at giving us individual, tailored worlds, we're just further cut off from other people, losing not just common language and common source of truth, but an actual shared reality. You know, we talk about sci-fi tubs as places of transformation.
Usually gross, mm-hmm. Usually some kind of goo.
Absolutely. And of course, there's a movie from 1999 that predicted this isolation.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us.
But The Matrix got it wrong. In that movie, we're kept prisoner in this artificial digital simulation, but at least we share the world. That's how people end up meeting and eventually staging the revolution and having some weird dance scenes against the machines. But 25 years later, well into the century of bathing, what actually happened is way more frightening. The machines are creating billions of different worlds, one for each of us. So we never actually meet in a shared reality. And now we just spend a lot of our time fighting over which world is the real one.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Okay, back to Autumn Reeser and her story. Gabby, going through the movie, very diligent, right? Mm-hmm. You figure out what it is that her character is saying in the tub as she's mastering Italian right before she breaks out of the time loop.
And the big reveal that what you say in Italian is, if something is right, it should feel like getting into a warm bath. Love it.
Perfect.
It was perfect for your podcast.
That's right.
Huge for us.
And that's where Jacqueline is at in that moment. She goes, no, I'm going to be stuck here forever. And that's exactly what was true for me until it wasn't. And like a month after I finished this movie, I left my marriage because in this movie, I was waking up and going like, this is not what I want. Watching this movie back, I'm like, holy shit, that's exactly where I was at in my life. And I didn't even recognize it at the time. They have this great scene that I didn't even know where she's saying, maybe we should take a honeymoon. You know where I really want to go? Egypt. I want to go to the pyramids. And that's exactly what I did. I left my marriage and went to Egypt eventually, to the pyramids.
Wow.
I don't even remember that line. I don't even remember saying that.
So she's in a time loop movie and she escapes the loop in the movie and then goes on to escape the loop in her real life. She leaves her marriage and goes to Egypt.
She still remains a mystery, eternal as the Sphinx.
She didn't remember that until reviewing it for us. And that's the kind of revelation that we provide here at Why is Amy in the Bath HQ. She found an answer in a movie, weirdly, in a story that she was part of.
So many of our bathing beauties feel stuck, isolated, traumatized, nostalgic. The tub is a common denominator. We're trying to unstuck ourselves in there, trying to wash the day or the years away, trying to self-improve with the magical healing power of a woman-owned wellness brand. Trying to turn the tub into a sensory deprivation tank, right? No noise, just us, like Phyllis told us.
And then it becomes a figure for communing with one's own soul, for private thoughts, because you're in a space that is ultimately, ultimately personal.
In a secular society, what more can we ask for than communion with ourselves? To hammer it out, ourselves.
Yeah. But Gabby, let me ask you something that may seem a little bit sacrilegious given the nature of the show. What if the tub is not actually the ultimate way to know thyself? Mm. What if it's a cheap imitation of a higher experience, which is to say, communion with the unknown, the sublime, something beautiful and terrible at the same time, something we have no real agency over?
Right, something we can't hammer out ourselves. Which brings us to a film we adore and a bathtub film to boot. Lars von Trier's 2011 picture, Melancholia, starring who but Kirsten Dunst. This is her magnum opus.
Yeah, interestingly, Kirsten has sort of been an echo of Amy throughout this series. She keeps showing up. We saw her on the Walk of Fame.
Kiki Dunst! Oh, another tub queen.
Her movies keep coming back over and over again. So it's sort of appropriate that we found so much significance in this movie with this kind of shadow version of Amy Adams.
Kirsten Dunst should have won the Oscar for Melancholia, but she was rudely shut out of the Academy Award noms. She did win Best Actress at the Cannes Film Festival, though.
But that's European, so we don't care.
Yeah, of course, that's not mass culture. Mm-mm. Give me my French fries. Get your bonnot potatoes out of my hands, girl. Melancholia is a lot of things. It's a devastating metaphor for depression, a smart capitalist critique, a love story between two sisters. But operating on top of and through all that, it's a movie about apocalypse, literally.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst plays a woman named Justine who falls into this debilitating depression over the course of her wedding reception, which is held at her sister and brother-in-law's massive, insane, lordly estate. It's ridiculous opulence. So in the days following these absolutely disastrous nuptials, the end of the world looms. A blue planet called Melancholia is barreling toward Earth. The scientists, not great scientists, I guess, couldn't predict Melancholia's world-ending power. It was hiding behind the sun. Typical. Nothing to be done.
Yeah, you never know when the mood might strike you.
Or the planet.
Or the planet. Melancholia agrees, depression agrees, and Cialis adds agree.
There you go.
It can happen anytime.
Here's the thing. As the doomsday clock counts down to midnight, Justine is the only one of her family to accept the end of the world. She submits to disaster. She basks in it, even, because every other demand, to be a blushing bride, a rational thinker, an economic contributor to society, all that feels wrong, especially in her depressive state.
Yeah, she is not a happy bather. First, she escapes to the tub during her wedding reception. She rips her gown off, leaves her veil on, and just sits in the water staring blankly. I think we've all been there. Her brother-in-law is played by Kiefer Sutherland, and he throws a Kiefer Sutherland-sized fit.
A conniption.
It's big time. He's paying for the wedding, and Justine, along with Justine's mother, the amazing Charlotte Rampling, they both ditch the party to take baths.
Those bitches have locked themselves in their bedrooms, and now they're taking a bath.
We should have put showers in the guest wing. I've said it 100 times. For fuck's sakes, if people want to linger in a bath, stay at home. Here. We offer you an 18-hole golf course. Where else are they going to get that? Nowhere.
Little does he know, Justine literally pissed on his golf course moments ago.
So there is good comedy in it. It's not the sad trombone part, but
no,
it's got its
moments.
She
squatted right down in her wedding gown on that green.
Oh, yeah. And when the party's over, she ditches her husband and her bridal chamber and has sexual relations with her younger coworker, who happens, Gabby, to be played by Brady Corbet, the Oscar-nominated director of a little film we like to call The Brutalist.
And when Brandon and I went and saw The Brutalist together, we could not stop giggling about the fact that Brady Corbet was once brutalized by Kiki Dunst in The Sand Trap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The real Brutalist was the thing that happened in The Sand Trap.
Oh, no.
True, though. Anyway, Kiefer Sutherland as the brother-in-law confronts Justine, and he can't stop harping on about his 18-hole golf course, which is the be-all, end-all of leisure under capitalism because it's still productive. Mm. Businessmen make deals on the golf course.
Right. That's like the joke of, like, golf.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, Kiefer makes Justine a deal. He'll shoulder the wedding cost if she agrees to no less than perfect happiness.
I hope you feel it's well spent.
Well, that depends on whether or not we have a deal that you'd be happy.
Of course, we have a deal.
Congratulations. How many holes are on our golf course?
18.
That's right.
Yeah, capitalism insists you be happy. Because for any malady, physical or spiritual, there's a consumable solution. A free market just magically solves for this stuff, right?
If you want to be left the fuck alone, get in your damn bathtub.
But when Justine's at her most despondent, a warm bath is the last thing she wants. And in the movie's second tub scene, her sister, who's played by Charlotte Gainsbourg, a lot of Charlottes in this movie, tries to coax her into the tub, but Justine can't bring herself to step into the clawfoot.
Turn your bath. You need to wash, right? I'm so tired.
She rejects those palliatives, those niceties. Then, and here's the rub, she gets better when it becomes clear that Earth is toast.
Yeah.
She ultimately breaks free of the woolly yarn she says she's trudging through. And we track her transcendence on the banks of a river in the glow of Melancholia, the big, sad, blue planet. Imminent disaster is rapture to her. She's buck naked in nature.
It's a full frontal.
Yeah, she looks great, I'll say that.
Yeah.
She's laying in the grass, basking in the glow of Melancholia, which is the majesty of this movie, and why it speaks to the Y2K tub bloom. The century of bathing is also the century of the everyday apocalypse.
From the beginning, when we were thinking about what could have caused the tub bloom, one of the ideas I had that we went back and forth on was maybe it has something to do with 9/11. The bloom starts after that. It was the great trauma of the early 21st century. It was the end of the American century, the end of a whole sense of ourselves. And if you squint at it, the fear and the insecurity and the doubt that we have about what America is and our place in the world and all of that stuff makes sense that culturally we would want to see images of ourselves retreating inward, retreating into the safety of a tub, into the womb, into some sort of primordial state where nothing can get us, where we're returning back to some previous time. But yeah, it continues to feel real. And then of course there were other disasters, the 2008 financial crisis, the pandemic, climate catastrophe.
We've talked about all the ways the bathtub is sold to us as an escape from disaster. However small scale, got an ugly bathroom? HGTV says a sexy pedestal tub offers great bang for your buck. Feeling stressed? Calgon and Goop say the tub is an escape.
Calgon, take me away!
Yeah, but Melancholia tells us you can't buy that escape. The answer? Wild abandon on the riverbank. In the nude. In the glow of imminent destruction. Face disaster head on.
But there's a contradiction at the heart of Melancholia. Kirsten Dunst stares into the abyss with deadly calm. Doesn't seem to care that her sister and nephew will be obliterated too, except that she comforts her nephew by building a, quote, magic cave that will keep him safe.
Dad said there's nothing to do then, nowhere to hide.
He's forgotten. About the magic cave.
Magic cave.
What is this magic cave? It's a teepee made of sticks. It's imagination.
Yeah, the magic cave is possibility.
She builds this out on the lawn. It's just sticks leaned up against each other. It's obviously not a shelter, but they're holding hands and weathering the end of the world. Spoilers for Melancholia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They dissolve in there, Brandon.
Yeah. Yeah, the planet looms up behind them. Kiki Dunst is sitting there, Buddha-like. Her sister goes through basically every stage of grief, it seems like, in about 35 seconds. Mm. The child is trusting Kiki so much that he just has his eyes closed, very calm, very placid, and then they all just evaporate. And that's the end of the movie.
She's confronting the end of the world with, like, a gracious nihilism.
Yeah. It's a very unusual attitude for an American movie, which I guess technically it's not. But that idea, I think, is very scary to us. As we're retreating further and further inward, the idea of opening out to some bigger thing that we dissolve into is terrifying. It always has been, but I think even more so now that we're given all of these assurances from all of the systems that we participate in, computer, economy, social, all of these things that tell us everything will be all right if you just do this, if you just push this button, if you just go here, if you just watch that. And so the idea of this kind of nothingness that they allow themselves to accept is very compelling. It's very fascinating.
Hi, guys. Here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. Yep, that's good. Then I stare at a red light. It's the kind that helps your cells positively glow. Oh, wow, wow, really bright. Okay. Next, I take an ice bath. That's how you melt your fat and fix your, I don't know, other stuff. Ooh, yep, feeling super healthy. Can't feel my toes. Breakfast is raw liver, unless I'm fasting for 36 hours. Because that resets your whole, like, everything. Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Cygnos.
Like and subscribe.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we came back to over and over again is Wanderer Above the Sea of Fog, the great romantic painting by Caspar David Friedrich, right? It's a classic. Mm-hmm. You've seen it. It's a wanderer on a cliff staring out into an abyss full of fog. So you can't it's a fathomless depth, right? You can't see what's beneath the fog. And that's what they confront in Melancholia and accept. What do we know about tubs? That's not a fathomless depth.
It's very fathomed. It's extremely fathomed.
It's extremely fathomable.
Yeah.
The point of the tub is to make everything in your life fathomable.
Yeah.
You have so much agency over your life. You get in there and get some martini bath salt, you'll have beautiful skin, and you'll figure out all your problems.
Absolutely. Yeah, the idea of the sublime is this very German way of thinking about things. But it's also pretty Eastern, opening yourself up to nothingness, of seeing this illusion revealed and then understanding that there's something beyond that, something transcendent. It's an interesting way of integrating those two things. And again, something that we as Americans have a hard time wrestling with. So we don't see it much in mainstream American culture. But interestingly, the Apple TV show Severance, very popular, very mysterious, has references to Wander Above the Sea of Fog in its storyline, and this idea of being trapped by all of these different systems, mostly capitalism, and that there is some kind of way of being delivered from it, although we don't know what that is yet. So maybe we're starting to toy with that idea a little bit.
Another movie that touches on this is Arrival.
Yeah,
the Amy Adams movie, the great, oh God, Amy. That's your favorite Amy performance.
Oh yeah, far and away. Yeah.
Yeah, probably mine too.
Interestingly, it's a lot of the kind of emoting that we've been talking about people doing in the tub, this idea of processing this ineffable thing that's right in front of you. She's not in a tub, she's facing it directly through glass, through this sea of fog that these beings live in and emerge from and speak to her. and ultimately reveal, you know, a truth about the universe, about the way time and space works.
But you know what? In the climax of that film, she is transported into the alien's little chamber.
Right.
She enters the sea of fog. She's floating. And that's where they revealed to her the simultaneity of time.
Yeah.
Amy knows the secret of the universe.
Yeah. Which kind of introduces a paradox for us. Why is Amy in the bath? Because she's not in the bath. And that's not a very satisfying answer. So let's try and bring it around and figure out once and for all why she's doing this.
Well, think about that. Amy is, as we've talked about, a girl next door, kind of a throwback figure, all-American, red hair. She's got her star on the Walk of Fame. She's been in all these popcorn films. She's a song and dance woman.
All she's done her whole career is sing along.
Exactly. Amy is the 21st century actress.
As we said in the third episode, she is that holy trinity. She's America's sweetheart. She's a sex symbol. She's a serious actress. She's all the things that we imagine a certain kind of talent, a certain kind of prestige to be.
And she remains popcorn. Her next project is Cape Fear.
On Apple.
A redux of a redux. A wife menaced by a killer from the past, and there's a storm.
Yeah. So it ends where it begins. Back to the beginning.
Back before she was growing one too many nipples.
I am a woman. I am an animal.
Back before she was staring at a woman in a window from a tub.
Is something going on over there? I heard a scream.
Before she was guzzling mini Tito's bottles in the tub.
Before she was doing whatever she was doing in Nocturnal Animals.
Before she was inspiring the masterpiece that is BVS v. Cialis.
Yeah.
In Batman v. Superman.
I just don't know if it's possible for you to love me and be you.
Way back even before she was an aspiring starlet in Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day, where she had to choose which guy she was going to end up with in the face of disaster. In that case, it was a war.
No, I won't accept that. I won't. This, all of you, none of you stuff that Michael's pulling. It's too much.
Before even her breakout role in 2005's June Book.
I don't know what he's thinking. It's not my fault.
All the way back to 1999.
Her first credit.
Before the Century of Bathing even began.
On the eve of the Century of Bathing.
There they are. Amy Adams and Kirsten Dunst holding hands after taking second and third place in a deadly beauty pageant. A couple of almost winners.
Mm-hmm. In Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. They've lost to Kirstie Alley and her daughter,
Denise Richards,
who is now riding in front of them in this victory parade on this giant swan float, which, because of some poor construction and some bad use of a torch, explodes. Giant fireball.
And Amy and Kirsten Dunst, icons of Y2K cinema, they just hold hands as the float explodes in front of them. Two pageant girls.
First and second runner-up. And what do? They just keep getting on with it.
Yeah, there's nothing to do. They just hold hands.
Yeah. The perfect one, Denise Richards, dies, and what's left for the 21st century are the freaks.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst is the girl who works in the morgue painting dead people's faces. And Amy is an airhead who's secretly this just incorrigible sex fiend. Loves her boyfriend to death.
Yeah. They're the ones left to carry the torch into 2000 and beyond.
Neither has won an Oscar, but they keep chugging along.
Yeah.
Just like their characters in Drop Dead Gorgeous. Because what do you do as a pageant queen? You stay in your seat. You have a responsibility. You smile and wave.
Yeah.
What do you do as a starlet? You stay in your seat. You have a responsibility. You smile and wave.
And you do that even in the face of disaster. In Drop Dead Gorgeous, they each just move up a spot. Kirsten Dunst becomes the pageant queen. Amy always almost the winner. But yeah, through it all, they just keep going. Because how do we ever know when it's bad enough? Will we see a new planet in the sky? Will we see a new nipple on the chest? Will we see some dude at the bathroom door?
Kirsten Dunst and our girl, Amy Adams. What are they doing? They're constructing magic caves for all of us.
Yeah.
Even in the face of disaster.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They have their stars on the Walk of Fame. And that matters to us. Even when we think it doesn't. Like it did that day when we went to the walk during the wildfires. It was a comfort and they know it.
Yeah.
The magic cave is the bathtub. It is the bathtub actress. Just delivering fantasy or escape to a weary world. Give me your tired, your hungry, your poor. Give me your weak, your huddled masses. Amy wrote that. Kirsten Dunst wrote that.
They wrote it together.
All of these girls wrote it. God knows what the future of cinema is. We don't know. Might not even be a thing. We might have AI Amy in more and more tubs.
Yeah. There is a possible singularity of endless Amy's and endless tubs. Satisfying our desire for that sort of thing forever and ever. Who knows?
Escape, fantasy, illusion, magic.
Also comfort and return and warmth, nostalgia, all of these things that have multiple meanings, multiple uses, sometimes good, sometimes bad. Are we moving forward in time? Are we moving backward in time? It's hard to say. And depending on what kind of being you are, maybe there is no difference between the two. And maybe that's what we become when we're watching Amy, somebody who sees her in all of these times, in all of these tubs, in all of these showers simultaneously. And just for a second, we glimpse something that's a little bit bigger than ourselves. So this is basically the end of our investigation into why is Amy in the bath. But it's not really over. In the same way that time loops are never really over, there's probably going to be some more stuff coming out in the coming weeks. We've got bonus episodes that were on the Grab Bag Collab Patreon. We're going to run those. And we may have a few more surprises, too, in store.
We've been stewing in the tub for nigh on 3 years, Brandon?
3.5 now.
3.5 years. What a joy to finally break free. And get this out to the huddled masses.
That's right. This is, was, and probably always will be, Why is Amy in the Bath? I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
And I'm Gabby Lombardo.
And we'll see you somewhere around the tub.
Why is Amy in the Bath is produced by Brandon and me for Grab Bag Collab. Our show is produced and edited by Livy Burdett, and our theme song and music is by Nathan Reedy. Our logo was created by John Ross. New episodes drop Mondays for Grab Bag subscribers and go wide Fridays. Subscribers to Grab Bag get access to a bunch of cool stuff. Extended interviews, more tub data, and some bathtub after dark convos. You will not be disappointed. If you want to sink deeper into the tub with us, email us at amyinthebathpod@gmail.com. Check out our Substack, becauseitstrue.substack.com, where we talk more about our research and the secret history of the movies. Finally, follow us on Letterboxd at amybathpod for curated lists of tub films.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We have everything you need to update your window treatments with Window Images blinds and shades. We carry vinyl, aluminum, and faux wood blinds, cellular shades, and more. Plus, get them trimmed to width in-store for free. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening this week. Save big.